Gary Engberg joining us now, Mazamani, Wisconsin resident, professional fisherman and guide. He's also an outdoor photographer. He's a columnist and co-host of a Madison-based radio show, Outdoors Horizons. And I've had a chance to listen to it, and I enjoy it myself, as a matter of fact. So it's great to have him back to talk about fishing. And again, we can talk about walleye fishing, we can talk about muskie fishing, we can talk about pan fishing, and we can talk, I think, and certainly Gary can answer questions from the most professional fisherman out there to the person who just wants to get started and maybe has questions about how to do that. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Give us a call, shoot us an email. We'll be glad to talk with you. And Gary, welcome back.
Thank you, Larry. It's always a pleasure to be here.
And you've been associated, just to carry over a little bit from the previous topic, you've been associated with the sturgeon for a long time, too.
I've done a lot of research and done a lot of writing about the sturgeon in Wisconsin, the lake sturgeon, and been over to Lake Winnebago. Ron Brook is the DNR, the man who's in charge of basically the whole Winnebago system. And I don't know, I listened to some of the show driving in today, but the Winnebago system is the largest freshwater fishery for sturgeon in the world. And beside the Columbia River out west, where they have a lot of them, I mean, the Winnebago system is unbelievable. I've been there during the winter. They don't have a hook and line season on the Winnebago system, just the winter spearing season. And that all has numerous harvest caps where they reach 90% of a certain level of harvest, let's say a female adult sturgeon, they can close the season off immediately. The season can be, well, within 24 hours. Season's normally 16 days, but they can, if they hit any of these harvest caps, so they're managing these fish very, very well. And, you know, to see an 80-inch or, 175, 180-pound sturgeon, you know, and those fish, like you said, I heard one thing you say, the fish that they're planting now in Milwaukee are going to be around a lot longer than we are. Because, you know, they're 20, 25 years old before they even start spawning. Male and female are basically the same size. And then the females are going to be the larger ones and start growing. But it's a tremendous fishery. And also, too, there's a program the DNR has, Sturgeon Guard. I don't know if you talked about it, where people can participate and actually help put in a 12-hour shift protecting the fish along the Wolf River for any poaching that may go on. There's also a great book if people would like to see it. It's a great table book for having. It's called People of the Sturgeon. And Ron is one of the people involved with it. And the funding, I think a lot of the funds go to the sturgeon restoration.
Yeah, I interviewed Ron for that book. It's a great, great book. Well, we can talk about sturgeon, but we can also talk about bass and other fish.
Talk about the water in the Wisconsin River.
Well, let's go to Henry first in Waukesha. Henry, hi. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, thanks very much for taking my call. Your guest is involved in my very favorite activity of all time, fishing. I love to catch smallmouth bass. I don't do much fishing, however, here in southeastern Wisconsin. I do a lot in Michigan. But I'm just wondering where you would advise me to get started to do some good fall of the year smallmouth bass fishing in southeast Wisconsin.
Southeast, you can... I would recommend a lot of the rivers, which people really don't use or utilize as much as they should. And I would maybe even, you know, if you want to come a little bit farther over, come over toward the Sauk City area and the Wisconsin River there. Anywhere from the Wisconsin Dells Dam south is going to be very, very good smallmouth territory. Right now, the Wisconsin River is roaring. The normal flow this time of year at the various dams, this morning I called up and got the flow of the dams from Castle Rock, Wisconsin Dells, and Prairie du Sac. Normal flow right now would be about 4,000 cubic feet per second. At Sauk Prairie at the dam there this morning, it was 62,000.
Whoa, whoa. Yeah.
So we have water, and I live on the river, so the water is like almost in my backyard. I have a 20-foot drop from my backyard and stairs down to the river itself. Well, it's up 3 feet from the top of the steps. So we'll have to wait a little while, but you have fantastic fall smallmouth fishing. I think the size of the smallmouth has gone down a little bit. I don't catch quite as many fish. 20 inches and bigger as I used to, but a real good mix of fish in that 14 to 18 inch, you know, range. And basically, if you, I don't know if you're a fly fisherman or if you just like use spinners or plastics or crankbaits, you can catch them about any way. I try and stay away from live bait fishing for them, you know, this time of the year, because the fish are very, very aggressive. They're bulking up for the winter like all species. And if you're using live bait, a lot of time they're going to swallow it down. And I would recommend if you do use live bait, use a circle hook. Because then a circle hook, you don't actually set your rod with them. You just keep reeling, and you'll, every time you'll have the hook will be on the side of the fish's mouth.
Excellent.
But I would check there. There's a lot of good rivers out here. I mean, even the Baraboo River now, which is damless. They've removed all the dam, so you have that free-flowing river there. You have the Pecatonica River is very, very good. A lot of rivers down here in the southwest part of the state.
Yep. Okay, well, I sure appreciate that, and I hope I get out there soon.
All right. I'll tell you, when the Wisconsin River gets down, it's well worth it.
What happens, any idea, you know, when, what happens to the fish in circumstances like this? You know, when you've got that much water, I mean, do they stay put? Do they get carried?
No, they get carried down? Well, I imagine some of your smaller fish, you know, and you know, your forage or your bait fish of the year and your game fish of the year are probably going to get blown a little bit. But what happens is when you get high water, and especially extremely high water like we're experiencing now, fish move in very, very tight. The fish will be, I don't care what species it is, talk about sturgeon. And the sturgeon season, the hook and line season in the Wisconsin River from the Dells down is still open till the end of the month. There hasn't been that many fish caught. You know, you got a 60-inch minimum. But fish will move in tight. Walleyes, muskies, smallmouth, they're going to be in 1-2 feet of water out of the main flow of the river. And that's the main thing they're going to try and do. And they do this anytime, even when you have normal flow. They'll try and find areas to hide behind, you know, slack water areas, little inside cuts behind. You know, you can have a depression in the bottom of a river just 1 or 2 feet. Fish can hunker down there. They'll deflect, and they'll be, you know, all the water and the fast current will be going over the top of them. So very, very shallow whenever your water is high. Don't be afraid to get out there. And now you might have to put on a pair of waders. Most of the time I'll say just a pair of tennis shoes, but we're getting a little bit cooler, and that's one thing we need right now beside the water going down is cooler water temperatures. But get out there and just fish with a relatively light jig. I'd say a 32nd ounce jig, a plastic tail. Gulp products are very, very good. You don't have to use live bait, and just make little pitches. Like be like a bass fisherman fishing in some wood and timber, and that's where the fish are going to be. And then when the water goes back down, fish are going to relate to the main current back out in the center of the river.
But for now, they're in.
They're going to be hiding behind anything and hunkering down, and they'll be in shallow.
They'll be in shallow. Gary Engberg, our guest, as we talk with him about fishing, and not really zeroing in on any particular fish, but he can talk about any of them. Walleyes, I'd like to talk about muskie as well with him. Call us at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. Have you been doing, probably haven't been doing a lot of guiding here in the...
Not too much on the river, but the Madison chain is still producing extremely well. What we need now is just, we're coming to that period now where finally are starting to get water temperatures down low. The Madison, I think in the last 2 years now, has produced, I think, 8 to 10 fish certified over 50 inches, up to 53, 54 inch. Madison area, the Capital Cities chapter of Muskies, Inc. has done a fantastic job with stocking the area lakes. They've been stocked. They had a five-year program where they stocked area lakes with the Leech Lake strain of muskies and the Wisconsin strain of muskies. They put pit tags, which is passive integrated tags, into these fish so they can run a little wand over them, tell them when the fish was stocked. They can see the growth, and they can follow this fish for years to come. And, you know, with muskies, we're going to be talking about, you know, 15 to 20 years before these fish get big, too. So they may outlive some of us just like this. I know the sturgeon are going to.
All right. Darren and Madison, let's go to you. Hi, Darren.
Hey there. How you guys doing?
Good.
Great.
Good. I had a question for you. One time I was talking with my grandfather and my grandmother. They normally go to Canada fishing, but I just moved out to the Madison area. And they mentioned something about a perch run on either Mendota or Monona Lake there. Not sure if it's even if it's true or when it is really what I'm looking to find out.
There still are perch in Lake Mendota. Lake Mendota, like if we go back to probably the 50s and the 60s, was like the mega place for catching yellow perch and lake perch.
All right.
The numbers are not near what they used to be. The university has done probably more research on perch than about any fish species there is. You could always look back and see some of that data. But right now we still have there's a good population of perch. It's just a matter of there's so many people that usually end up taking a lot of them during the ice fishing season. That's when they probably are fished the most. It's a deep water fish where they're catching them probably 50 to 80 feet deep. And the problem is a lot of people get on these fish and you're bringing them up from that deep water. You're going to be blowing the air bladder out of the fish's mouth, actually. And people will keep catching these fish out of the same hole. Well, usually, perch are a school fish. If you're catching one size fish, you're going to keep catching that size. So if you're catching 5-6-inch fish, move on to another hole because you're just going to be killing these fish.
Right, but you're just slaughtering them.
But if you are set up right, and the people who do very well in the Madison Lakes, one of the good fishermen from the Hera Fishing Club is Jimmy Kashuta, Charlie Grimm. He's the new president. The Hera Fishing Club, let me not get off the subject, but if anyone is interested in learning how to start fishing, contact them. They have a website. They'll get you involved. They'll get you out on the water. They're looking for members. It's a great group of guys. But anyway, on the perch, people are set up right. They have their electronics, they have a four-wheeler, and they have rods where they're going to go and they're going to drill a lot of holes, and they're going to keep moving around till they find the fish and then, take some fish, then move on to another hole. But it's a matter of just being prepared, having the right setups. A lot of people are going back to using the old swish rods with the big reels that they used to use 20, 25 years ago. If you can find them on eBay, they're worth about $50 to $100 now. But that was a good way. They had a big reel with a little tripod on it, and he would usually use a copper tube or an inline sinker, and you could let it down to the bottom, one or two, three reels up, and you could hook it on the reel where it would go back down. If you brought a fish up, you wanted to get right back down to those fish, you'd go right back down to the same depth.
Beautiful.
All right.
But it is still a good place, and you can catch fish. Remember, the first fish that bite usually in the spring are going to be perch, and they're going to be shallow. You usually can find them on your weed edge.
All right. Gotcha. Awesome.
Thanks, Darren. Thanks a lot for calling. Kathleen in Milwaukee. Let's go to you. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi. Thanks so much for having this show. I'm originally from the Fox River Valley, and in February of 1959, my great uncle and his son convinced my father, Joseph, to go sturgeon fishing for the first time. And my father had been a farmer and never learned how to fish until on his honeymoon when my mother taught him how to fish. And for the next 50-some years, the biggest argument was, she said it was her biggest mistake ever in the marriage, and he said it was the best thing she ever did in the marriage.
Well, the people that I take guiding a lot, I'll tell you, and I probably will get some people sending me nasty emails, but I found women to be much more patient. And they end up being a lot of times better, better fishers because they just, they'll sit there and they'll wait it out and, and they're not going to get all frustrated and nervous.
And
like
they'll listen
most
to what
men.
You tell them.
And they'll listen to what, exactly. That's the most important thing.
But she became a fishing widow of sorts, especially.
That does happen.
During sturgeon season. And in those days, it was like a three-week-long sturgeon. In 1959, my father's first attempt, he speared, with his uncle and his cousin, he speared a 6'1", 135-pound sturgeon.
Yeah.
And brought it
That's
home.
A, yep.
And he became addicted to doing sturgeon fishing. When on your first time out, you get that adrenaline rush.
I know people who've been spearing for many years, and they keep signing up, they keep getting their permits, and they still haven't gotten one. So to get one your first time is very good.
Well, and he got two more that were long enough during his lifetime. And one of the things, and ironically enough, my niece, who... she has speared a sturgeon as well.
You know what? We're going to have to take a short break here. This is a great stories that you're telling us here, Kathleen.
Thank you.
Gary Egberg, our guest, and he'll be with us right up until 12:30 on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Stay with us. Talking fish and fishing today with Gary Egberg of Mazamani, professional fisherman and guide. Take a look at his website. It's GaryEngberg.com, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right, Gary?
Yeah, GaryEngbergsOutdoors.com, and there's some good videos on it, or some YouTube videos on right now of the different dams up and down the Wisconsin River and what the water flow is right now. So you can see what roaring water looks like.
And Engberg is spelled E-N-G-B-E-R-G. E-N-G-B-E-R-G. Kathleen, and we lost her, but she's had a question about sturgeon preparation. You catch a sturgeon, what's the best way to prepare it?
All the sturgeon that I have had, and I have not prepared it myself, has been smoked, has been staked up and smoked. And actually what the prize is, and it's a shame because some people will waste, you know, the fish, and I really don't like to see that with a fish that's lived so long, is just for the caviar. And out of a, I'd say out of a 70, 80-pound sturgeon, you're probably going to get 15 to 20 pounds of caviar, and that's what the people really seem to want. But smoking it, you know, over low coals, using a good wood, and like a fruit wood or an apple, a maple, you know, something like that. A nice hardwood is very good over a nice, you know, 10, 12 hours if you cut it up in chunks. I'd do it about basically how I would on a salmon or a lake trout out of Lake Michigan.
Let's turn to William in Green Bay. William, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Good. What I want to know is where are the crappies and where is the best time to fish them? Now, I'm in Green Bay and I fish the Wolf River a little bit, but we got high water too, like the Wisconsin River, but we travel around. We always just love to catch them and release them.
Okay, right now, this time, your crappies basically are going to go into when our water temperature is 60s and works its way down to 50s. They're going to be in the same places when you found them in the spring in relatively shallow water, but you're not going to find them in such a large concentration. You're still going to find them, you know, by your wood, your stumps, your brush, you know, underneath piers, you know, anywhere that there's, you know, some type of cover and structure. Those fish will still be in there and very shallow, and you can, you know, fish them with a little bobber and a pinky jig or a small jig, you know, and a couple wax worms, fish them like you do in the spring. But then there's a period as our water gets colder where those fish kind of will migrate back out to deeper water. And, you know, what you have to do basically is use some electronics and look for a conglomerate, you know, a concentration of fish. Mm-hmm. And the better electronics you have, probably, because crappies, even after their initials, you know, in the spring, after their initial spawning, they can turn up anywhere. They're really wanderers, and sometimes they'll suspend in the water column where there is bait fish and forage, but there might not be anything else as far as structure goes. But initially, I would try them in that 5 feet and less in water. You know, keep experimenting around, cast up, you know, make sure you're making a long cast and you're not going to be spooking them, and, you know, just keep trying around because you're going to find them, but you just won't find them in the concentration.
Gary, what do you charge for one day?
$300.
$300 for,
yeah,
two,
and that
one
for,
or two?
For two people, and that includes everything.
Everything.
That's all your bait. That's a good sandwich for lunch and about 7 or 8 hours of me talking.
Okay. Good. Well, thanks a lot.
Check out the website. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Bob in Waupaca, we turn to you next. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Larry. How you doing?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Good. Yeah, thanks for having this show. I was just driving down the road and was listening to it with great interest. And I thought your listeners today might be interested in Buckshot Anderson. He's been guiding in the Northwoods for, you know him, for 60-plus years. He is going to be giving a talk at the Waupaca Public Library on October 21st at 6:30, and it's primarily going to be on the history back to the turn of the last century and when his dad and those guides got started. And so it's going to be fishing and guiding, but quite a bit of the history of northern Wisconsin in that era.
So that's October 21st at the Waupaca Public Library. I interviewed Buckshot on the show not too long ago with his new book out, and we had a great conversation about the history. He's a very entertaining guy.
Yeah, he sure is. I saw him, and I actually fished with him on Monday, he and my wife, and he was getting ready to go on his annual pheasant hunting trip that he's been on for decades and decades, and is looking forward to. He's coming down here for one of his favorite pastimes, duck hunting, when he gets back from that trip, and he's agreed to give a, no admission, open to the public talk on the history of Northwoods guiding going back 100 years.
That, what time is it that on the 21st?
You know? That is at 6:30. Okay. It's going to be 6:30 till 8, and the space in the library is going to be limited. So if anybody was interested in that, you might want to. We're probably going to have him. There's so many people want to meet him and shake his hand. He's probably going to get there at a half an hour early if I can get him out of the duck blind.
Okay. Thanks a lot for calling. Did you know Buckshot, or do you know
Buckshot? I know. I don't know him very well. I have met him. He's a friend of a good friend of mine up at Boulder Junction, Jimmy Weston. But he's in with the crew of the old timers, the Ray Kennedys and the Porter and Pop Deans. And there's a crew of guys from northern Wisconsin, you know, from the 40s and 50s that are just amazing.
Yeah, amazing guys. Thanks, Bob, for calling. Appreciate it. Steve in Green Bay, let's go to you next. Hi, Steve.
Hello.
What's on your mind?
I was wondering what temperature do lakes stratify, do they turn over?
Probably, I would, you're somewhere probably between 53 and 55 degrees.
53
but every lake is not going to be the same. Now, you're going to be some lakes, if you get a shallow lake, let's say Lake Winnebago we've been talking about, which is, you know, one of the largest freshwater lakes there is, but it's only 19, 20 feet deep. That does not turn over. Lake Wisconsin, we have up here 10,000 acres. You got deeper water, but it's more of a flow, which does not turn over. So you have to kind of look around at the lakes and check them all individually, because let's take an example. If you go up to Vilas County or the Boulder Junction area, you can always find a lake that hasn't turned over. You know, if you go to a lake that is turning over, and usually you can tell the water's going to be cloudy. You know, you're going to see a lot of dead, dying weeds. You're going to have a bad kind of, you know, a funky smell. But there's so many lakes, and like I said, they don't all do it at the same time, where you always can find a lake that's going to be good fishing. Because if a lake is turning over, don't bother putting your boat in.
Yeah.
All right, great. That answers my question.
But you know, in the mid-50s, mid to low-50s, that it'll start happening, and you will be able to tell if you find a lake that's turned over.
All right. Thanks for calling. You can join in, too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234. Talking Fish and Fishing with Gary Engberg and Dennis in Fond du Lac. You're next. Hi, Dennis.
Hi. I had a question. I've heard so much about the potential state record muskie coming out of Green Bay. Wondered if you had heard or know of anybody with any large muskie out of there. What you think the potential for that is?
Probably a pretty good potential. I don't know about a world record, but they're, you know, I think it's 52 inches right now what their minimum is, and I know that there's been some talk and discussion to raise to 54 or 55, and there's a fair number of 50-inch fish caught. A year and a half ago, I interviewed a guy named Dale McNair. He's a Canadian who fishes the St. Lawrence River, and he caught what they think, if you take the formula Muskie Inc. have, this fish was 58 inches long with a 35, 36-inch girth, and if you do the formula, it would come out to be 70 pounds. But that's out of the St. Lawrence. If you look on my website, put in Dale McNair and do a search on him. You can see an interview with him. You can see pictures of the fish. Also, too, we have here in our, Larry and I were talking earlier, in our Madison chain of lakes right now, the DNR has done a fantastic job. We've had 10, 12 fish in the last year caught over 50 inches. So we're getting 40-pounders right down here in the shadow of the state capital.
Yeah.
But the Green Bay, I mean, the Great Lakes, you know, you're talking about, you have a lot of forage, you have a huge body of water, and these are some of the things I think you need: a quality forage, you got to have some deep water, and it seems like Lake Michigan and the Great Lakes would be good, because the lakes that have Cisco as their forage base, if you go up to northern Wisconsin, find the lakes that have Cisco or Tulibee, what they call them in Minnesota, they're a very oily, high-protein fish, and I think fish grow a little bit more where they have these as their forage base. And then you're talking about in the Great Lakes, you have all your salmon and trout, which is a very oily fish with a high protein, so they're going to really be growing. And, I mean, with the boundless water and stuff like that, I think the potential is probably there.
There you go.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot for calling. Let's turn to Mary in Dodgeville next. Hi, Mary. Thanks for calling.
Hi, this is an interesting show. I grew up on the east side of Lake Winnebago in between Sherwood and Stockbridge, right on the lake.
Stockbridge is my favorite.
Yes, and I was wondering what sturgeon eat, and in particular, what role lake flies play.
a very, very important part. Most of the food they have hanging down from their mouth, they have barbels. And it's mostly going to be microscopic, little plankton, stuff like this that they feed on constantly. It's filtered through their systems, and that's how they gain their weight. And the lake flies or the mayflies and, the worms and everything, that when you have, you know what the big hatchets are in Winnebago. When you've seen some of those mayfly hatches, those are the things that they're eating on. I've been on the upper lakes on Poygan, Winnicotti, Butamore, and be up there walleye fishing and have a big porpoise. I mean, I'll have a sturgeon porpoise next to me, while you're sitting there on a nice quiet day. You have a 7-foot sturgeon jump up right next to you. You kind of jump in the, do a little bit of jumping. But that's their main type of, microscopic plankton, stuff like that is what they mainly eat. When people fish for them, a hook and line, what they're using is basically night crawlers or cut bait from a rough fish. But that's not their main type. They don't go around eating smaller fish.
There you go. Thanks for calling. An email from Bill, and he wonders, where do the bluegills go when they're not in their spawning beds?
They're probably still going to be in the weeds. Bluegills usually are going to be very, very weed orientated. Sometimes you might find them in your secondary weed edge. You got your first break line with your weeds. Sometimes they might be a little deeper on a secondary weed edge, or sometimes you can find them in a little bit deeper water if the lake you have has a sand grass, which is kind of a finer grass that'll grow in a little bit deeper water. But those fish that, they might not be quite as shallow. If you take the Madison Lakes as an example, your weed line is probably, in the peak in the summer is going to probably be 13, 14 feet. Those fish are still going to be in the weeds. They're not going to be in a couple feet of water, but they're still going to be hanging around that weed edge.
And I can remember boating across Lake Monona in Madison, and I had the locator on, and right out in about 50 feet of water here, about 5 feet down, was a school. We turned around, went back over, and caught several really nice bluegill right out in the middle of...
A great pattern on the Madison Lakes, and you can do this on any lake, Joe Puccio, who is kind of, we call him Dr. Drift, he's an excellent pan fisherman. He taught me this method. He'll go out over the deep, he'll do drifting over the main basin of the lake. He'll alternate his rods with different he uses little micro split shots. An ice fishing jig or an extremely small jig, a 64-ounce cobra jig, something like that, with some waxworms or spikes, and they'll alternate, cover the whole water column from 5 feet down to 40 feet deep. Usually your fish this time of year are going to get more compressed, going to be in a smaller area. The fish now are concentrated around 20 feet. But if you just do a drift with the wind, have those rods over the side, cover the water column, you'll catch. Perch are always going to be your deepest. Bluegills could be about anywhere. Crappies will probably be in between.
Let's turn to Jeff in Onalaska next. Hi, Jeff. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, I would like to know, we've got some pretty high water here on the Mississippi, too. And I was wondering, where might we try to look for some bluegills in that high water this time of year? Because I don't think you can even find a weed bed.
Well, I would go in some of your back channels and your side channels. Get back there, out of that main current. Get back there in those backwaters and some of those, those back sloughs. That's where you're going to find them right now. Anywhere that they're going to be out of the current. Totally out of the current. What, sir?
I didn't hear. Lake on Alaska?
Yeah, I would get in, I would get in very, very shallow water, and I would look for structures or anything that's breaking the current. And that's going to hold true for about any fish species right now.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. You can join in too at 1-800-642-1234. We got an email from Bob, and he's wondering where and how should we fish walleye in an inland lake as this season, this fall season progresses.
Well, right now, and we haven't had that, we still have pretty nice weather, so our water temperatures are still probably in the 60s in most areas. I think they've probably gotten down in the upper 50s, mid-50s in northern Wisconsin. But walleyes are going to be, you're going to find walleyes in a lot of the same spots you did in the spring. I would try still right now, I would be looking for some deeper water structure. I would fish outside of my weed edges. I was out the other day on Lake Mendota, and I was fishing, anywhere from 14 to 18 feet. I was just using a kind of a plain Jane rig I use, which I'll use 6 to 8 pound mono. Then I'll put on a barrel swivel, and above that I'll put a little egg sinker. Or and you could do the same thing just using a split shot without using the barrel swivel. Then I'll just go to either a plain hook. I'll drag probably now a half a crawler or a minnow and just fish outside that weed line and just, you know, fish either. You can fish vertically if you want to use a jig, or you can just drag that plain bait rig, you know, just drag it along the bottom very, very slow. Maybe work off your bow mount trolling wheel motor. And then if you do have any deep water structure or any bars, rock bars, you know, in the center of your lake in your main basin, try some of these, and especially try them in lower light periods. And anytime, you know, you get low light, cloudy day, your fish are going to move up a little bit shallower. So, you know, a lot of the things are going to be, you know, fish are going to, all your fish now, I don't care if we're going to be fishing muskies, northerns, walleyes, bluegills, crappies, these fish all know your days are getting shorter, your water temperature is getting cooler, you know, and they know the weeds are starting to die, they know that something's going up and they're going to be going on a feeding binge. So if you find these fish and try some of these areas, you're going to be able to catch them now because they're all going to be hungry.
Claire in Germantown, on to you now. Hi, Claire.
I own a cottage on Big Cedar Lake with my brother, 1893. There was a fellow from Pike Lake that caught a sturgeon in our lake, I don't know how many years ago. Our lake is 165 feet deep at the deepest point. I think it was a sturgeon. And could you tell me, would there still be a sturgeon there? I know. I was thinking this sturgeon is as old as I am, 80 years old.
Well, they can be that old, and they can be, you know, like talking with Ron Brook, who's the sturgeon man up in Winnebago. I don't think, you know, it's unusual to be over 100 years old.
No,
and these fish are all going to outlive us, especially
do you
these
young. There's another sturgeon at the bottom of Big Cedar Lake?
Oh, there could be.
No kidding.
There could be. There could be the same one, too.
No.
That one was caught. That one was.
Met
its demise.
Abounded.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But also, too, people realize these are lake sturgeon we're talking about, basically, but there also is another species you'll find in the Mississippi and in the Wisconsin River and other rivers is a sand sturgeon, which doesn't get near as big. They'll probably get, maybe 3 or 4 feet long, and that would be a nice size one. The restrictions, then you can fish for them during the whole hook and line season. But there is a difference between the lake and the sand sturgeon. But those fish are going to live. Like they're not going to lay eggs and start spawning until they're 20, 25 years old. And then after that, they only spawn and lay eggs every 4 or 5 years.
There you go. Thank you for calling, Claire. Appreciate your call. John in Cross Plains, we're on to you now. Hi, John. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I just had a couple of questions and a comment. No, real quick ones. The fry that they're releasing, sturgeon, won't they just make a meal for the trout and salmon and other predators out there in the Great Lakes? I wouldn't think the survival rate would be very high at all.
Initially, I think there might be a little bit of, you're going to lose them probably the first year or two. You're going to lose, I don't know what percentage, I don't have those figures, but I don't think it's necessarily, if you've seen what a sturgeon is, and I mean, they don't have fins and they're kind of prehistoric looking, I don't think they're a preferred forage. You know, I don't think many fish really want them. It would have to be something, you know, that they just, you know, were very hungry or something that just came by. But after the first couple of years, those fish are going to be growing, and I don't think, you know, you're going to have a very, very high, probably a 5 to 10% mortality rate after that.
Yeah, about 5%.
The other thing is I did many years ago get a fairly large sturgeon out of Lake Monona. Yeah, it was even before the Causeway went in to give you. But that was on a live sucker, 4 or 5 inch live sucker on the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're pretty opportunistic feeders, even though they.
So I've never seen one in the Madison chain of lakes, but I'm probably going back 20 years ago when they used to give out commercial contracts to people to take rough fish out of Mendota and Monona. They would now and then get a sturgeon in their nets,
mm-hmm.
and there were 100-pound sturgeon in those days, and I'm sure that those fish are probably still around.
Very good. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
I can tell you a story about that. I had a friend who took up scuba diving, and he their first dive where they it was in a group, you know, so there's about 10 of them, and they go down with the guide, and this is in on Lake Mendota in Madison, and they're sitting in a circle on the floor of the lake, and you know it's their first time down, and about a 6-foot sturgeon swam right into the middle of the circle, and that pretty much ended it for several people. They took off, and it was in relatively shallow water, about 10 feet or so.
But I know some people where it's also skin divers, and they've gone below the dams on the Wisconsin River, and they said they've seen flathead catfish where they got out of the water real quick. You know, I mean, when you see their heads as big as a 5-gallon pail, so and you see a 40, 50-pound catfish, you're heading to high, up to shore.
Oh, man. Well, Gary, it's always great. Thank you so much. And muskies, you catching any muskies?
We're starting to get there good now.
Yeah.
We get down, once we got below that 70 degrees, those fish will move in very, very shallow. You can catch fish in that 1-2 feet of water, fish like a bass fisherman, fish around the docks and the weeds. And then as we get cooler, those fish are going to slide back out to a little deeper water and some deeper water structure. But as the water cools down, now's the time. Use quick set rigs if you're using live bait and suckers, so you don't kill those fish. And especially, we have a lot of fish that we're doing research on now in the Madison Lake. So try and let all those fish go.
Thanks, Gary. And again, your website is?
Gary Engberg, www.GaryEngbergOutdoors.com. Send me an email. I'll get back to you anytime.
GaryEngbergOutdoors.com. That's the place to go. And Gary, you'll be back again, I hope.
I'm sure I will.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Larry.
And thanks to everybody who's helped us out take a day off our fall pledge drive. It's now scheduled to start on Tuesday, October 5th, instead of Monday. Doesn't have to, though. For every 800 early donations, we'll take another day off the drive. And I think we have about 640 or so pledges more to take a second day off the drive. And so a shorter fund drive's kind of in your hands. You can help us out here. We'd appreciate it. Just go to WPR.org and make your contribution, any amount, and that it counts as a pledge. Just to let you know, tomorrow at 11, we'll talk safety issues with young people in school. Dr. Susan Reich and Barbara Temke will be our guests, and so we'll have that at 11 o'clock. And then looking ahead to 11:45, prescription eyewear with Jim LaLuzerne, our guest. Thank you for listening and stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.